Welcome back. Welcome back. Today, I am really excited. I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're going to do this absolutely amazing interview where we're all going to learn. I'm ready to learn, actually. How about you, Carol?
Yeah, as always.
As always. This is a particularly interesting subject, in that we hear these words constantly repeated, and we even repeat them. But many of us don't understand the depth or have a true understanding of the definition of these terms and how they relate to us individually, to our families, to our health. So the other day, I was speaking with a dear friend and colleague and actually one top experts in the country on peptides, and she said this one thing. She said, you know, peptides, exosomes, stem cells, and ozone therapy are the future of medicine. And that just rang in my ears. Ding, ding, ding. And there I was. And I said, that sounds like a radio show for sure. And then we tracked down a time we could all get together, and here we are. Carol, would you like to introduce Kathleen, Dr. Kathleen?
I met Dr. Kathleen O'Neill Smith at a conference. I believe it was AMMG. And she lives and practices in Boston, and I believe your degree is also from Boston University, is it not, Kathleen?
It is. That's correct.
We spent hours together, including floating down the lazy river, but I find out what a brilliant, brilliant woman she is, highly motivated, exciting, and the information on peptides came out, and she just plunged right into there. So we feel like she's the best person in the world to help us sort out all this information. So, Dr. Kathleen.
Get out your papers and pencils.
Get out your papers and pencils, everybody.
So that is so humbling.
We would like to have you define some of these things. We were just talking about the complexity of understanding stem cells, exosomes, and peptides. What are we actually talking about?
Wow. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I think
welcome.
Exactly. Good morning. So these are really tricky terms, but we're talking about therapies that are considered to be medicines, so medicinal therapies. And you can also say signaling, medicinal signaling therapies. So the MSCs, medicinal signaling, MSTs, the medicinal signaling therapies include peptides, exosomes, stem cells, because these therapies can turn on all kinds of different pathways in your body. They all occur naturally in your body. We have all of these things naturally, so that we call them bio-natural. And when we think of peptides, they're bio-regulatory. When we think of stem cells, they exist in our body naturally to do healing. And when we think of exosomes, exosomes essentially are derived from these compartments in our body that are called multivesicular compartments, vesicles. So exosomes are derived and they originate from just some container, a compartment that has many vesicles in it. And one of the vesicles that it will secrete will be exosomes. And then exosomes essentially will work around the body in order to transmit signals from cell to cell to cell. So you guys love to talk about old-time things. I love to think of exosomes as Paul Revere. Paul Revere's ride is coming up in Boston, and we think of him going from every village and town to get the people to up into arms. And so that's what exosomes do. They go around the body. They're secreted by our cells, and they go from cell to cell to cell, and they basically transmit information. And if there are bugs living in us, like mono also has its own form of exosomes. So living organisms have exosomes, and we can use these as therapies to direct and target treatment, the type of treatment that we need, the range of treatment that we need using peptides or exosomes or stem cells. We can use them all together. And it's just brilliant. We can build bodies. We can build things. It's amazing.
Now, can we direct these? Now, these work through the RNA, do they not? They're RNA signalers? Exosomes?
Exosomes do. I mean, yes. If you think of exosomes, you can really think of exosomes working through RNA, working through DNA, and playing a really big role in cell-to-cell communication, particularly in the immune system. So when we think of an mRNA vaccination, as people are doing right now, exosomes are the same thing. They're communicating information throughout every cell in the body, and that's the point of the mRNA vaccine, right? The point of that vaccine is basically to deliver the information about COVID-19 so that the immune cell basically activates and recognizes it so that it can't invade the host or the person.
Now, so even stem cells release exosomes also, do they not?
Yes, they do. Stem cells and exosomes are very much related.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also derive exosomes from platelets. So your PRP is going to, if you were to lyse it, if you were to activate it, you could release exosomes from that as well. And those are the little components, vesicles, that are inside these little, these little containers that basically, if you think of exosomes, they carry genetic materials, the mRNA, and their genetic messages, their means of carrying genetic messages, good ones and bad ones, from cell to cell to cell. So you can use a vaccine. Yes, go ahead.
There's some that point out that a virus is an exosome. Can you sort that out? I'm really confused on that point. Is that true or not true, or are they indistinguishable? What's going on with that?
I don't think of a virus as being an exosome. I think of a virus as secreting an exosome. So all cell types, including the platelets, including the stem cells that we talked about, and viruses like mono or COVID, they're able to secrete their own exosome. And when they secrete their exosome inside a cell, they basically ultimately end up in the nucleus and changing the genetic material through mRNA, and then popping outside of that cell that they're popped into, a virus, when it's popped into one cell through pinocytosis or endocytosis, where there's like, they just kind of, it's like a balloon. You make an indentation of a balloon, it doesn't pop it, and they just somehow get in. And then once they get in, they go into the nucleus, and then they change the material, and then all of a sudden, they pop themselves out the same way they pop themselves in. They're really remarkable. And so they call it, you know, there are different kinds of proteins that will traffic these vesicles, these exosomes, between intracellular compartments and then push them out extracellularly. I think of a virus as a cell that basically can secrete its own exosome as well. So I know in 1996, immunologists realized that Epstein-Barr virus were able to secrete exosomes by fusion, and that essentially they could travel and traffic themselves from cell to cell to cell and infect the lymphocytes.
Okay.
So they behave like an exosome does. Viruses do behave that way, but I don't think of them as exosomes. They behave that way because they do that pinocytosis, that endocytosis into the cell, and then they pop back out. So they're behaving like an exosome. I'm just not thinking of them as an exosome per se. See what I mean? Okay.
Yes. Yes. So why is it like viruses, and would this be true of an exosome treatment, that they like particular tissue that they will be seeking out one type of cell rather than another type? Just like you said, lymphocytes or Epstein-Barr, why not a muscle cell?
I would say that they say, ask you a question again. I lost the thought for a second.
Okay. So if you use exosomes as a treatment, or if you consider what you just said about Epstein-Barr and the attraction of Epstein-Barr to lymphocyte cells, these viruses in general tend to be attracted to specific tissue. Now, if you use exosomes as a treatment, is it also attracted to certain types of cells, one cell over another? Are there a specificity there? If you use a particular cell, are you going to, say, be attracted to lung cells, be attracted to muscle cells? How does that work?
Yes, I don't think that we have right now the ability to target specifically a tissue. They are relatively targeting, but exosomes can activate T cells or immune cells or these natural killer cells that are in our body. Mm-hmm. And so when exosomes are secreted by certain types of cells, we have immune cells coming out all the time. Let's say you got COVID-19. You have mature immune cells that are coming out, and you have immature immune cells coming out trying to fight this infection. So when exosomes are secreted or injected into the body, they can induce certain type of activation of other cells. So when a mature presenting cell, a mature, let's say there's a cell that presents the virus to your immune system, it's called a dendritic cell. When this dendritic cell is showing the virus to your immune system, which is how it will happen, and they're mature dendritic cells that are doing that, you'll get a different response. So exosomes can be causing disease, exosomes can be treating disease, but they can't yet particularly target a disease. We're not at the point where we can be specific about where they work.
If we inject them into a damaged area, like into the knee joint, which is inflamed and damaged, will it more specifically enter into that area, or is it just totally a systemic treatment no matter where we place them?
Well, it's generally systemic. However, if you inject it in the knee joint, because the knee joint isn't that vascular, right? And mm-hmm. especially if it's damaged and we put it in the knee joint, it's going to be likely that the majority is going to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing, and it will heal that damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you were to inject any of these medicinal signaling therapies, which you can do, stem cells, exosomes, peptides into a joint, it's going to be very likely to stay there and do tremendous healing.
Now, I'm going to tell you something very interesting that I just learned, and this will give the audience a chance to breathe and catch up, but because now we're going to go back to clinical. And I've been using PRP for years, but I created my own method of PRP. And PRP,
okay, wait.
I'm going to define it.
Yes, please, because Kathleen already used it. I don't think people will know it.
Platelet-rich plasma. And what I do in my office is I draw the individual's blood, and then I spin it down with a special spinner at a certain speed, and it separates the red blood cells from the plasma. Then I take the plasma, and this is my method. I take the plasma and run it through ozone. Very gently, not high ozone, a very light infusion of ozone, because I don't want to damage anything. I want to stimulate something. And then I take that plasma and I inject it into joints, hips, knees, injured areas in the back, and I'm getting amazing results. But you just taught me some. And then if I have some left, I do it IV. And people feel fabulous with the IV plasma that's been stimulated by the ozone. And I'm sitting there saying that the results I'm getting, the way people feel, is so much better than I think I should be getting, you know? But what I just realized as you were speaking is that I know that I'm activating the growth factors, and there's a trace of stem cells in there also. But I might be also activating the exosomes. And
absolutely. And absolutely you are.
Making all this more active because people feel so much better with that injection.
Well, you know, that is fantastic. Go ahead, Carol.
Oh, I was just saying that's pretty exciting to have that therapy available.
Yeah, and it's
so
all...
Any therapy that we can use from the body, right? Think about it. Your body knows how to repair itself better than any drug or any pharmaceutical can. And if we use it in the way that Corinne is talking about using it, wow, that's exactly what we should be doing in order to heal ourselves.
It rather reminds me of the urine therapy as well. It's practiced in many cultures around the world that the urine is so full of immune factors and whatnot that they're using it therapeutically.
They're
that's
also
exciting.
Running the urine through ozone. To activate. Uh-huh. There's also therapy where they're running the urine through ozone and then re-infusing it. And this wouldn't be, well, it can be injection. If it's an acute allergy season, you can have really wonderful responses with that urine therapy run through ozone and then injected, little bits injected into the patient. And they have amazing responses, especially to seasonal allergies. Now, is this
after... That's amazing.
What? Yeah, I know. Isn't it fun?
It's amazing.
Yeah,
I knew this amazing. Was going to be particularly fun.
I mean, think about it. I've been to your home. You compost, right? When you compost,
yes.
You put the waste of these living things back into the earth. What happens?
A great
it's
vegetables.
Such a wonderful right, exactly. And of course, if you plant these, you know, the seeds in the soil under the full moon, it's even better. But the soil, so I think of the soil. And one of the things that you pointed out is when you take the blood or the urine and you bathe it in ozone, the milieu of the environment is critically important. When we put anything in an unhealthy milieu, the microenvironment that anything lives in, all of the healing agents, these medicinal signaling therapies, all of these medicinal signaling therapies have to be in the best milieu. They need to be in soil that is grown, that is produced from your waste products. If you put them in dirt, it's not gonna work. And it's the same thing for when we inject exosomes. I have not injected urine, but I will try that for allergy season. But when we inject any of these, you know, body bio-natural products, we basically need to know that the milieu is good. And it's amazing how many people really don't have optimum oxygenation.
Oh, yes.
Right?
You see it all the time.
It's even more important. Yeah, it's more important in these COVID times, where people are getting critically sick and they're testing their oxygen level with a pulse oximeter. I just saw them at Walgreens, so people can buy these for themselves, and their oxygen levels in their bodies are extremely low when they're ill, and that produces most of the symptoms that people are experiencing with this infection. So oxygen is so vitally important that having ozonated what you're using, you give an extra boost of oxygen to take that all over the body, which is desperately needing it.
There's a doctor who's a dear friend of mine, brilliant doctor, and he has people two ways. Put hydrogen peroxide in their baths with a little bit of Epsom salt or magnesium salts, which increases oxygen because the hydrogen peroxide absorbs into the body. Mm-hmm. Or if they have an ozone machine, he teaches them how to draw up ozone and shoot it, give themselves injections throughout the day. He said that's how he has maintained. He has this tremendous schedule. It's inhuman. And the amount of work that he does, you'd think that his office was a sale day at a butcher shop, because you can barely get in with all the people that he's treating and working with on chronic diseases and cancers. And he's teaching them all how to keep their oxygen up through different means. And ozone is one of them. He also recommends...
I love ozone.
Yeah.
I love ozone. I just found out a new treatment modality at the last conference I was at, ICIM. And you fill a syringe with ozone and you put it up your nose while you're holding your breath because you don't want this to get in your lungs. But you just sit there and hold your breath for as long as
you can. Oh, so it's going into your cells.
Right through this very rich circulatory area. It's such an easy treatment and no trouble at all. I was quite impressed with the simplicity of it.
And you can do that at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But caution is not to breathe it.
Yeah.
Really important. Do not breathe it in. Do not try to inhale it. Really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to, exhale, take a deep breath in so you have plenty of oxygen while you're not breathing, and then do it.
Oh, interesting. So I have two questions.
Are you guys aware of the ozone dialysis?
No, I've heard of it. But
Keyzone? Keyzone? I do that.
That's chelation with
ozone. Yeah, with Schallenberger's method. I use ozone with every chelation patient. And he says it increases by 4 to 10 times the response you get out of chelation therapy. So I've been watching that and working with that, and I'm getting very nice results there and seeing the results with people. So they get ozone prior to getting chelation, then they sit there for their chelation. And then at the end, the cherry on the cake, I give a little bit of glutathione to just support all the tissue. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, but it's only you who gives a cherry on the top of the cake.
Well, I'm a chef, what can I say?
It's so wonderful. You're always going to get that little extra icing on the cake. But no, I have a device in my office now where we circulate the blood out just like you do in a kidney dialysis patient. So you take the blood out of the body through one side, say the right, and you run it through UV light, and it comes up to go through ozone. And as it comes up, there's a filter and some waste product, like my alpha 2 microglobulin can come out, the beta microglobulins can come out, and other waste products. And then it goes up through the filter and gets ozonated, and it comes down the other side, goes through red light, which activates the mitochondria, and then back into the body. And you can circulate 5 liters of blood, or you do it for 45 minutes, and you can take all of the blood out and ozonate it, which is just, people feel fantastic.
That's interesting, because 20 years ago or so, or 30 years ago, when AIDS was very active, people used to go to Germany for a similar treatment. I don't think it was this complete, but where they would remove the blood, run it through ozone, and re-inject it. And they were getting some pretty substantial results, but... from that treatment. Where is this machine from?
It is from California. So there's a Dr. Yu.
Oh.
Louis Yu. Yeah, do you know him? Do you all know him? I don't think he's older. I think he's probably middle-aged, but he came up with this device that allows it to circulate. So there's a, peristaltic device that basically causes peristaltic pushing of blood as it comes out of the body towards all of these mechanisms. It's probably very similar to what you're doing. And I think that regardless of the way that you do it, the most important thing is that I really honestly believe that everybody needs oxygen. So, and the tissue needs oxygen. So regardless of how we ozonate, whether it's the way you've described brilliantly, with the cherry on the top, of course. Always with that cherry, because that's going to be the icing on the cake. And or you can do it the way that Carol suggested. I mean, I think it's just all of it is exceptional in terms of the micro environment or the internal milieu for, you know, addressing any dysregulation or any physiology that's not working appropriately within the body. It's just, it can treat any illness, you know, and so it can be used to treat anything. And it can be used individually. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Corinne, in combinations with other things and adding peptides and exosomes will only make that even better.
Well, let's talk about peptides if we can shift a little bit. And I have a friend who's a chemist and a specialty with peptides. And he said to me, Carol, you can do everything and more with peptides that you could do with hormones. So I was quite taken aback, seeing as I love hormones. And I understand that there are simply thousands of peptides in our body. And we're beginning to discover some unique features of some of them. So could you explain where we are with peptide therapies and what are they, how are we using them, and what's the promise of peptide therapy?
Wow, the promise is remarkable. Wow. But, you know, there are more than 7,000 naturally occurring peptides in our bodies, more than 7,000 that have been identified. And they're very natural to us. They are bioregulatory chemicals. And what that means is they signal, you know, all throughout the fascia, up and down the body, because the fascial planes circulate from head to toe, right? Mm-hmm. What happens in the toe is felt in the head in a millisecond. So these peptides are circulating through this milieu that we talked about, this microenvironment, which is within the fascia, and basically acting as a master control of multiple functions. They are a master control of hormone production, of cell communication with another cell, of signaling to different organs. So they are very different from hormones because hormones basically act on a receptor. Mm-hmm. So peptides don't necessarily act on the androgen receptor, the, you know, estrogen receptor, et cetera. They basically work throughout this extracellular matrix, throughout this internal milieu microenvironment, and basically regulating different pathways. And they're just remarkable. So I think there are three mechanisms that I think of that result to cause disease. One is the immune system gets dysregulated. And when the immune system gets dysregulated, depending upon the dysregulation, if it goes down train track one, it could be inflammation. Train track two, it could be autoimmunity. Train track three, it could be malignancy. So the other situation that happens when this immune system gets dysregulated is we have free radicals. And I know that you both love free radical conversations. I'm sure you've had many, where we have these reactive oxygen species that underlie all chronic illness and age-related decline. So this combination of the immune system that isn't functioning properly, it's imbalanced, and the free radicals basically have to be addressed. And so peptides can address many of those pathways. just quite amazing. So presently, you know, we can use it in joint injury. So we do. And I know there was the MD editor-in-chief of Frontiers in Neurology in Germany was working on a specific peptide therapy, very simple, for TBI, for traumatic brain injury and concussion.
Uh-huh.
The peptides are very simple. We have these long protein molecules that are called growth hormone and thyroid hormone, etc. But when we have very short, if we were to break up the 200 amino acids that are making up a growth hormone and we were just to take 15 or 27 or different numbers of them, those are called peptides. In each part of that 200, you know, little amino acids or letters that are joined together to make the specific amino acids or letters, we can think of them as, that are joined together to make growth hormone, can be broken up because each aspect, different parts of that long protein are peptides, and each part of them, each part of the growth hormone has a subset of peptides that work independently and do their own little function. So when you think of a growth hormone, it does so many things. Growth hormone can regulate your insulin. It can heal a tissue. It can produce proper immunity. And that's because it has so many different subset domains of peptides that will work in specific ways. It's really remarkable.
So
they're used for so many things, including, you know, infections, COVID-19. Very, very popular to use peptides. Not here, because we're very conservative, but many doctors, like regenerative doctors, will use peptide therapy in all infections, in anybody who has sepsis, in acute chronic infections. You can use them in cancer. They are remarkable.
Can you give us an example of what you might do in your practice with a peptide or series of peptides?
Sure.
Maybe paint us a little picture and about the features of particular peptides you might use.
Yeah, so we can understand its scope clinically.
Yes. Sure. So the one peptide I love is thymosin alpha because it's been very, very, very studied. So it's been studied since the 1950s that I know of, and probably longer perhaps in Russia. But here in the States, Dr. Alan Goldstein and Dr. White out of New York, you know, founded this thymic peptide called thymosin alpha. There are other thymosin peptides as well, but thymosin alpha particularly is a very, very effective peptide and has been well studied. So this one just has 28 letters in it or 28 amino acids. So whether you're a cow or pig, so humans share homology with other animals in terms of the sequence of these letters or amino acids that make up thymosin. And thymosin alpha 1 is known to stimulate the immune system. So when the thymus gland is in its youth and very, very young and very, very active, it will secrete these thymic proteins, one of which is thymosin alpha 1. And thymosin alpha 1 will go and work at the very beginning of the immune system, as if we were infants, as if we were within the uterus, and make the immune system function better. It's going to respond whether the immune system needs stimulation or whether it needs to be toned down. So thymosin alpha 1 is adaptogenic. It can upregulate and it can downregulate. And basically, it will mediate our most innate immunity. So very, very early immunity. And it will impact, if you take it, for example, I use it all the time for people who have been exposed to COVID, for people who have immune dysfunction, and basically we give that as a prophylaxis or a treatment to impact and to activate precursor stem cells, hematopoietic stem cells that come from the bone marrow, that come from the thymus gland, but usually the thymus gland is old by the time we're 15 or 17 or 25 or 45 when we're exposed to a virus, so because it's been working for your whole life. So essentially, it will activate your immune system in multiple pathways, you know, 15, 20 pathways, upregulating it where it needs to be upregulated to attack, through natural killer cells, through helper cells, to do surveillance within the body to shut down this virus or any virus from entering a cell. It's amazing. I use it all the time in my practice. My patients do so well, and it mitigates the virus, the viral disease, exceptionally well. If people have autoimmunity, we can use it as well. If they have pain, if they have, you know, any symptom related to autoimmunity, we can use it as well. And it will decrease and prevent in COVID a cytokine storm. So we've heard so much about this cytokine storm that
exactly.
Everyone's so frightened of. Yes, right? Very frightened of. If you have thymosin alpha, if you could produce it naturally, you would. But because your body gets so overwhelmed, if you take it, it regulates the immune system.
Now,
very safe.
In my office, I've used peptides, but not this one per se. Groups of peptides incredibly successfully with autoimmune disease. I've used it with asthma. People who continuously get these severe asthma attacks where they're being hospitalized and they can't breathe, the peptide injections have completely, at least for the patients that I've seen, which are not large numbers, I have a very small practice, have been completely just switched that. So these children do not have these attacks, these adults do not have these attacks. They're not going to the hospital. And it settles down. I also use it with autoimmune disease, with rheumatoid arthritis, with lupus. And I see these amazing results. But like you said, I create the milieu. I work with the diet. I work with the lifestyle. I work with people getting adequate sleep and getting good food and working with their bowels, so everything is working, and then these peptides go in, and it's like we said, the icing on the cake, and the results can be stunning, and to people who have gone everywhere. Have you found that they work with bowel disease, irritable bowel, or Crohn's disease?
Absolutely. Yes, they work with IBD and Crohn's and colitis exceptionally mm-hmm. well. You really have to clean up the milieu, you know, the internal microenvironment as well. But you absolutely, if you use a combination of peptides like body protection compound 157, then you will for sure, you know, help these people. There's no doubt. I've used on Crohn's disease, multiple Crohn's disease patients, a combination of peptides as you ask, Carol, BPC, the thymosins, et cetera, and they do exceptionally well. I have a woman, a patient, who's about early 40s right now, and she's been very, very sick with, you know, porticastin for delivering steroids and all kinds of other things. And once we started her on these peptides, which she understood completely right away how they work, so she was able to manage at home, you know, very easily, a few conversations here and there with me, and she... It's been 4 or 5 years, and she hasn't had any exacerbations. No exacerbations at all.
That's really wonderful. I have rheumatoid arthritis patients like that I've had for years, that they come in for their peptide shots. But I want to go back to basics again, because there's a piece I don't understand, and maybe you can help me with this. I don't understand the difference between stem cell and stem cell therapies and exosomes. When would I want one over the other or the other over? When would I seek? Which one would I seek? And what's the difference between them?
So one is cellular and one is acellular. So I think that that's really the biggest difference. And we're still sorting that out, and much study has to be done on that. I don't think that either of them would harm you if they were, you know, obviously from sources that were cleaned and through appropriate labs, et cetera. However, stem cells are cells. exosomes are non-cellular. They're acellular. There are no cells in exosomes. They're granules. They're the signaling molecules. So I think some people will tell you that the effectiveness of the stem cells are because they release exosomes, because they have these other growth factors within them, so that you don't actually need to use stem cells because you can use exosomes. Other people will say there's no way, you absolutely need the cells. So it's really interesting. I mean, we could even work as you do, Corinne, to activate stem cells that line our blood vessels. So there we have these cells, sites. They're called pericytes, peri-around site cell. These pericytes surround our blood vessels all the time. They're looking for the right milieu in order to be activated. So their cells as well, cellular therapy, and they just look like these little blobs that sit on the outside of the blood vessel. And they're there to heal. I mean, we don't have as many as we did when we were younger, of course. Young blood and young stem cells are much healthier than older blood and older stem cells. But we have stem cells that are ready to, you know, to become activated within our system. And that may be part of what you're doing when you do your ozonated blood. You're delivering back this activated blood that's allowing activation of these pericytes. So cellular therapy versus acellular therapy, growth factors, different types of growth factors within the exosome, potentially within the stem cell, but very similar to exosomes. I have used exosomes much more recently, whereas I used to use stem cells 5 and 10 years ago a lot more. But now I'm using exosomes. They're more affordable.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to ask two really important questions. Can we use nutrients or lifestyle or herbals to increase stem cells in our body? I'm seeing advertisements. I'm seeing also a very reputable company is talking about different nutraceuticals that are shown to increase, and these are oral, that are shown to increase stem cells, that are shown to support the telomeres, the little ends of our DNA that determine our life and our the length of life and our health. I'm wondering, what do you think of this, and do you think it's real?
That's a great question. Well, there was a study done in Cell in 2015, and basically they looked at the human immune system, and they looked at the human immune system in twins. They had a large study. It was a collaborative study, Karolinska in Sweden, North Carolina, Stanford. They came together in a large study, and they found that in this twin population, identical twin population, that there's a lot of variation in the status of cells, whether it's stem cells, immune cells, you name it. And what they determined in this particular study was that the differences in the variation and the function, not just the variation, but also the function of these different cell types in people, were not genetically determined, predetermined.
Really?
That the
That's
differences
really
were driven primarily by lifestyle factors.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And by lifestyle factors, well, you mentioned that earlier, right? You
yes.
work
yep.
on a diet and you work on all these other things.
Uh-huh.
You have to. They looked at 204 different parameters, including, you know, different cell types, different immune cell types, different chemicals that are released from all these cells, including inflammatory chemicals and anti-inflammatory, the cytokines. They looked at other proteins that are in the blood, in the serum, that are derived from these cells. And they saw that 77% of these parameters were dominated by lifestyle factors
wow.
in these identical twins.
This is
and
such an important
another
statement.
58% of them, it's so impressive, were almost completely determined by non-heritable factors. And then they write about, in their abstract, you know, the cumulative influence of environmental exposures from food, from viruses, from pollutants, from alcohol, from cigarettes, from whatever, is exceptionally important.
Wow. That's astounding. That's got my head spinning. I'm going to re-listen to that part. And
something we can do something about.
Exactly. You know, that gives us back our power. It's exactly what we're talking about. It's take charge of your health. And it gives us back our power. You know, everything is set up to be taking our power away. The whole society is set up to make, and intentionally and not intentionally, but it's set up to take our power away. There's this expert, but he only looks at eyes. And if you come in with anything else and your leg is broken, he'll send you away because he can't deal with you. And this expert that only looks at this, never looking at the whole, never even attempting to understand the whole. And yet, here's so much of what we're dealing with, we're in control of, or potentially in control of. That's pretty exciting to hear that. And to have a study behind us as if it makes it more real. But I haven't...
Multiple.
Multiple. Okay, I have another really important question. Let me sneak in there, Carol, right before you.
Okay.
Carol went to a conference this week, and I see it all the time in all the ads and everything, of a company that's selling the thymosin alpha, all these different peptides orally. Now, I've just been, before our talk, I've been looking all this up and everything, and it constantly repeats the fact that, you know, peptides are proteins and they don't get through our digestion in an ability to be clinically effective. What do you think about that? I've always used them by injection.
The only one I think that can be really effective orally, because it works within the gut, is BPC. But let's step back. You know, and I know, how disturbed the gut physiology is in the majority of people. And it's for the same reason that we just talked about. Because we have industrialized food, right? We're eating industrialized food. Everybody thinks they need a lot of protein. It's remarkable. And so they eat these industrialized foods as opposed to foods in their own gardens. We have enormous stressors. We have so many foreign things that we put into our body. And even if we put it in as Botox in our face, it gets to our gut. We know, I've seen, you know, read studies where an injury to the brain or an injury to one part of the body within 6 hours will cause leakiness in the gut. So if you can demonstrate under a microscope that the gut is wide open, that makes sense to me. And it makes sense to me because if I have a brain injury, and it's a serious brain injury or even not, the body wants to heal it. And so as a result, assuming that we eat the best food, assuming that we take in the best liquids, the body wants to open up, you know, it's like an IV, wide open, all the signals, let everything in to start the healing. So the communication from a concussion, from a brain injury, from a Botox injection, you know, from whatever, is going to go directly to the gut. And you're going to see dramatic changes under the microscope in the gut, wide open, leaky gut, increased intestinal permeability. But we know that the milieu of the gut is so disturbed by all of the adjuvants or foreign things our body's exposed to, whether it's pesticides or, you know, the way that these industrialized foods are grown and they put arsenic in the feed for the chicken or whatever it is. I'm not trying to create, anxiety, but this is real. So we have to understand the importance of the exposome, the cumulative influence of exposures in our life, of environmental, of diet, and of lifestyle, not moving, not sleeping. And that will lead to very different immune system identities. And when the immune system and these immune cells change and accumulate that are damaged, they will have had mutational injuries and epigenetic changes. And I'll come back and find that as a result of this lifestyle, a lifestyle that isn't health-oriented and these environmental factors. Because what happens when every cell has genes, and those genes can be turned on or turned off. And when you expose these cells to unhealthy habits, you turn on an inflammatory state of that cell. If you expose those cells to healthy habits, you turn off the inflammatory state. So that's what an epigenetic change is. Cells are going to turn on or turn off depending upon what they're exposed to. And we basically get turn on of inflammatory situations when we are exposed to unhealthy things. So it's really, really important. This comes back to the milieu or the microenvironment that you put the cherry on top, Corinne, and take care of. It is so essentially important.
So back to, that was actually my question too. So if you try to use peptides orally, I've seen a whole line of oral peptides that were created in Russia. Are these absorbed in the gut well or not well, or the preferential route is to inject them?
I think preferentially. So the gut is soft tissue, just like it's a component of fascia. It's not fascia because it's an organ, but it's a component of fascia. But I think that to put them into the subcutaneous tissue and to allow them to circulate through the fascia is better. I know those peptides that you're talking about, and I have tried those actually personally and with some patients, and I can't say that I see any results, but if there are results and they're silent, you know, we can have asymptomatic disease and we can have, you know, kind of silent benefits from these things, they're not really visible to the extent of a sub-Q injection. So I really prefer, to be honest with you, to really know that anything is going to be appropriately assimilated within the body, used in the way it's intended to. I prefer to give anything in any, you know, in any way that we can, aside from nutrients, through injection or some other way. I think the nutrients should go through the GI tract. We should try to, you know, heal the GI tract. But other than that, I think we should try a different mechanism.
Now,
interesting.
Very interesting, because this whole company is created off of this, and they're not cheap, you know. And so people are buying these and expecting results. Now they might be getting something, but it might be a little disappointing to them. But I wanted to. We're going into conclusion. Oh my gosh, has this been fun?
Can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
Just think about Supersize Me. Think about
Spurlock
and Supersize Me. Talk about the microenvironment, right? Within 30 days, he went from 10% fat roughly to what, 20% fat? He doubled it in 30 days by exposing him to the worst food you can be exposed to, industrialized processed foods. He gained 25 pounds. If people want to lose weight, they can just if they want to lose 5 pounds, they can just stop eating unhealthy food, right? His cholesterol went through the roof. I mean, people were concerned he was going to die.
He had fatty liver disease too.
Experiment. Of course. So, I mean, if we want to plant a seed, if you have a garden, the spring is coming, and you're going to plant a seed, are you going to plant it in dirt? It has no minerals or nutrients, or are you going to plant it in soil? Mm-hmm. They're very, very different. If you plant it in soil, you're going to get remarkable results. If you plant it in dirt, there's no cherry on top anymore. You're not going to get any results.
I spent all winter this winter making my garden soil stronger. I got seaweed from the ocean and put it all over the top. I have chicken poop and all their the sawdust from their beds all on the top, and in a few weeks I'm going to be turning it all over. So I've been preparing the soil like we all have to do in terms of our health, so that when we finally do put the seed, and what we have are some remarkable seeds here. We've been talking about peptides, stem cells, and exosomes all mixed together with ozone. We have some remarkable seeds here that we get results. You know, we can't just depend on the seeds like Dr. Kathleen says. We can't just depend on them. I always talk about if you throw seeds on a wood floor, what are you going to get? And so, Kathleen, Dr. O'Neill Smith, I just want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. I will be re-listening and re-listening and re-listening and taking notes on this interview. We came to the end of our time. It feels like we've been here for minutes. We'd love to have you back and so we can talk more and share. And
it's been so much fun. It's been so much fun. Thank you. I'd love to come back.
We always have it. And do you have a website that you would like to give out your website?
Yes, please. It's Treat Wellness, LLC, TREAT, Treat Wellness, WELLNESS, LLC, .com.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Carol.
This is a very complicated subject, and it's important that people...
Understatement.
...do get an inkling of the potential, as I mentioned before. And you, Dr. Kathleen, said to Corinne that the future of medicine is this. And I think it's so important for our audience to grasp that there is much, much more available here and now. It's not something that we're dreaming of. It's treatments that are obtainable now.
And it begins with the milieu. It begins with preparing the ground. So thank you so much.
It's the soil.
It's the soil. And we'll be back next week. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. When we're together, I always learn. And Dr. Kathleen O'Neill Smith, you blow my mind every time we speak. So thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.